the drawing board. Okay, next one. So this is, full disclosure, this is the HRSA chiropractic demonstration grant. We did spinal manipulation versus active exercise. It's a randomized controlled trial, clinical trial with subgroup analyses. And so, I'm preaching to the choir here to tell you there are conflicting data on the effectiveness of different interventions for back pain. Basically, what I said to you before is that, if you saw the Spine Journal's evidence influence series, Haldeman's commentary was beautiful on the shopping bag approach, right? That we have hundreds and hundreds of interventions, and all of them work a little in somebody, but none of them work all the time. And so the holy grail, at least in our mind, is to look at subgroup analyses, that I still believe that there's a subgroup of people who need the high-velocity low amplitude manipulation, then it will be effective in that group. And so in our case, what we did is that we took DeLito and Fritz's prediction rule, which, as you know, looks at the FABQ score, fear avoidance belief questionnaire, pain proximal to the knee, and hypomobility at one or more lumbar spine segments and greater than 35 degrees of internal hip rotation. Somebody out there is going to ask me in a minute, I don't know what that means. But this is what's been published. And so, as you know, he and she published that data in acute low back pain. If you recall the rule, which I actually have here, one of it was as they went to 4 of 5 being the criteria for being positive on the prediction rule, that less than 16 days of pain was one of the criteria. Well, obviously in a chronic low back pain study, that it eliminates that. And so what we are doing is 3 of 4 makes them positive on the rule. And certainly you can criticize that. But what we're going to do, just for the record, this is DeLito and Fritz's original paper. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, what they did was they looked at the effectiveness and manipulation based on the patient's status on the rule. And so if the patient had four of these five factors, then they were considered positive on the rule. Now, if I were in the audience, being the jerk that I am, I would say, hey, Paul, what's the inter and intra examiner reliability of segmental mobility testing? There isn't. And so we really needed to use something that was in the literature. We have a bunch of experimental hypotheses as we're going forward with this. Basically, just to give you how that works, is that it's a springing on the back. And so we're not using algometry. We're not using any pressure probes. It's a subjective measure by the screening clinician, and certainly a weakness of the study, and we fully acknowledge that. Also, the internal hip rotation, is a weakness that we would acknowledge. And so, as you know, what DeLito and Fritz published was that patients who were positive on the rule who underwent manipulation had a statistically significantly greater effect from spinal manipulation than those who were negative on the rule who underwent manipulation, or those who were positive on the rule who underwent exercise. And so this is some of the work that Fritz has done on. They've also looked at prediction for active exercise. And so the way that we're doing the study is that basically the patient comes in, they get screened, and the way we're doing it is that we have a screening clinician, again, in this case it's Jonathan, who does the physical exam portion, and then our study coordinator does the FABQ. And so in our case, we've attempted to make it impossible that either our study coordinator or our screening clinician can know what the patient's status is on the rule. So they remain blinded as to patient status on the rule. That information then goes in a sealed envelope to another investigator at a separate site who then decides positive or negative. They fax back to us then the randomization as to which group the patient is in. In this case, this study is both VA and non-VA patients, and so we have outside clinicians. Basically, we divided Rochester into north and south, and so we have a PT facility and a chiropractic facility in north, and a PT and a chiropractic facility in south that are doing the treatment. And again, we use 2 times a week for 4 weeks. Active exercise, I'm going to define that in a minute, and I'll define spinal manipulation. And so this is the just explaining our blinding. And so just as a real quick difficulty that we had was defining manipulation and defining active exercise. The problem in the literature is that there is no consensus on that. And so just for the record, when we were designing this, we had a bloodbath because, again, I'll tell you what, if I had it to do again, we would have both chiropractors and physical therapists doing each arm of the study. In our case, we chose physical therapists to do the active exercise and chiros to do the manipulation. If I had it to do again, we'd mix it. Just because it became a bloodbath at the study design. Because the PTs thought that we were trying to put physical therapy versus chiropractic. That was the way that they were feared that the study would be spun. And so, like I say, if I had this to do again, we would do a mixture. But we did it. We did. I had to rough up a couple of people. It was okay. We did finally get through. No, we did come to consensus. Basically, I compiled a literature review of systematic reviews of manipulation and active exercise, and we came up with definitions. And so the active exercise, for core stabilization, we're really using the San Francisco Spine Institute's exercises, and then we're allowing for flexion extension. And directional preference, we actually, in our experimental hypotheses, actually do a McKenzie evaluation, looking at end-range loading, look at repeated end-range loading in different positions to see if those are predictors. High-velocity, low-amplitude manipulation was what we allowed for spinal manipulation and flexion distraction therapy. One of the things we did in this study was we did not put an age cap. We wanted to do a quartile analysis of age responsiveness. And so my first 4 patients, the average age was 80. Interestingly enough, we recruited a lot more older adults in this study than we thought we would. And so one of the other sub-projects that we have is we're going to do qualitative interviews to ask both the therapist and the chiropractors why they chose to do either mobilization, manipulation, or flexion distraction, and why the therapist chose the exercises that they did. We're doing 2 times a week for 4 weeks. We actually are doing patient expectation, and one of the things that we built into the study was we ask expectation prior to and after randomization, because one of the things that we were concerned about was patients would call, here this was a chiropractic study, they get randomized into active exercise and they say, oh shoot, I don't want to be in active exercise. I really wanted, so we want their expectation before and after they get randomized. Plus if they get to see me, you know, it's big and ugly, and so it really gets, we want to make sure they're okay with all that. Again, we're held to, this was the study, we've actually had five serious adverse events. Actually, I think I have that. An adverse event is any undesirable medical event. And so, as I said, if they get a cold, if they sneeze, if they, whatever, we have to, not sneeze, I'm just kidding there. But if they have a cold and sniffles and nausea, then we have to report it. We then code it with the WHO adverse event coding. And then that goes into our database. Serious adverse events are anything where you're hospitalized for more than 24 hours. And so we've had 5, none related to the study, but we have had 5. We had a suicide attempt after the guy was randomized. We had a couple of car accidents. And so we certainly have had our share. In this case, again, we have a baseline visit, and then we collect our data at the baseline visit, and then we do this intake data, which is our McKenzie evaluation and some other behavioral things about pain in our experimental hypotheses that we built into the study. And then we collect data immediately post-intervention, within a week post-intervention, and then at 3 months post-baseline, so 2 months post-intervention and 6 months post-baseline or 5 months post-intervention. And then we also do patient satisfaction. That should say patient satisfaction. We do a patient satisfaction because, again, as we know, both expectation and satisfaction are predictors of responsiveness to care. And so we wanted to include that. To date, we've phone screened 487 patients. We've enrolled 100. Of that, we've had 12 terminations because of various factors. We have 51 VA, 49 non-VA, which really just has been a blessing that we really got a very slow start with this. We had a lot of IRB issues. We had a lot of logistical VA issues, getting personnel hired and getting in our VA, Andy's VA, they get things done in 3 days. Our VA takes 2 to 3 months, and so it's been a challenge. We have 72 males, 28 females. Again, it's actually one of the good reasons that this study is both VA and non-VA, because it's difficult to recruit females within the VA system, just because it is predominantly. We have 49 in active exercise. We have 51 in spinal manipulation. And so, did I do okay on time? Okay. I think we have time for questions then. Yeah, Maria. We have to report everything.
Within 5 days?
No, only serious adverse events have to be reported within 24 hours. AEs, you just submit once a year. It's your continuing review. We have an AE log that we have to, it's a separate database that has to be submitted. Yeah, it's, and for those of you who are going to do research in the VA at some point along the way, to get a database on the VA server has been a Herculean task, and we have a whole bunch of data that we can't pull out because we can't get IT support to get it to us. So we actually have to keep, because for reporting, we keep all this on a separate log. Yeah, Bill.
Talk about your decision to have 4 weeks of care versus what they've done in the other prediction rule studies, which was, I think, 2 adjustments.
Yeah, we wanted to make it generalizable. And so the question, because, it's difficult in a chronic low back patient to justify just 2 visits. And so really, at the end of the day, I don't know if I can say this out loud, but I will anyway. I'm not convinced that the prediction rule means anything, which is why we built so many experimental hypotheses into our design. And so we're randomizing them based on the prediction rule, but we have a whole bunch of other hypotheses that we're testing experimentally. Yeah. Other questions? Okay, thank you all very much.
Thank you.